Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, I'd like to inform all participants that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants will remain on a listen-only mode for the remainder of the call until the question and answer session. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, you'll do so by pressing star and one. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Benjamin Haynes. You may begin.
Thank you, Rebecca, and thank you all for joining us today for this briefing to update you on CDC's COVID-19 response. We are joined today by Dr. Nancy Messonnier, Director of CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, who will give opening remarks before taking your questions. At this time, I will turn the call over to Dr. Messonnier.
Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today. Since I last briefed you, there has been one new case of COVID-19 detected through the U.S. public health system. As has been widely reported, at this time, we don't know how or where this person became infected. This brings the number of confirmed cases of person-to-person spread in the United States to 3. We also have confirmed 2 more people who have tested positive for the virus that caused COVID-19 among U.S. citizens repatriated from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. That brings the total number of people with COVID-19 to 44 among this group of repatriated people. I'd like to share with you some additional information about the U.S. case CDC confirmed late Wednesday. CDC's officials first heard from public health colleagues in California about this patient last Sunday, February 23rd. California reported a severely ill person who had not recently traveled abroad or had contact with the known case of COVID-19. CDC recommended testing for COVID-19 that day. We received samples on February 25th and confirmed the results with public health officials in California the day they were finalized on February 26th. As I said, the patient's exposure is unknown. It's possible this could be the first instance of community spread, meaning the illness might have been acquired through an unknown exposure in the community. It's also possible, however, that a thorough investigation may show that the patient had exposure through contact to a returned traveler who was infected. CDC has sent a team to support the California Department of Health and the local health departments in investigating this case. We are working hard with them to find and identify how the patient was exposed, as well as tracing back people who were exposed or might have been exposed to the patient. Like you, we are all thinking about the well-being of this patient, this family, and this community. People who were exposed to this person during their infection are at some level of risk depending on their exposure. Based on what we know about how this virus behaves, we expect that we will find additional people who have had contact with this patient, especially those who have had close prolonged contact. This, of course, includes family members and potentially among healthcare workers who cared for that patient. There has been some confusion about whether this person met CDC's criteria for testing for COVID-19. Let me briefly comment on how we have set our patients under investigation or PUI criteria, which has been evolving, as all of our guidance has, to meet the needs of this rapidly evolving situation. You can look for these updates online at www.cdc.gov/COVID-19. CDC's definition of a PUI from the beginning has been broad, for travelers especially, because this was a disease that was being introduced from another part of the world. We have been looking for people with fever, cough, or trouble breathing. Fever and cough are pretty broad parameters, especially during flu season. We've had to rule out many people who had other respiratory illnesses. At this point in our investigation, we are most focused on symptomatic people who are closely linked to confirmed cases or had travel history. But our criteria also allows for clinical discretion. As public health professionals, we know that there is no substitute for the astute clinician on the front lines of patient care. Our clinical team, working with state and local health departments to assess PUIs, has not said no to any requests for testing. So on the topic of PUIs, I want to say that as we've been watching the increased spread of this virus across the world, we have been working with our partners on an updated PUI definition that was posted online yesterday. The updated PUI definition takes into account the new geographic spread of the virus and includes a list of affected areas with widespread or sustained community spread. This list is dynamic and will change as our travel guidance is revised. I would now like to share an update on our progress to get all state and local public health labs the capacity to test for this virus. That is CDC's role in testing for this illness. As I said before, this has not gone as smoothly as we would have liked. We've been working simultaneously on a couple of possible solutions, and I'm happy to say today that both have been delivered upon. Right now, labs can start testing with existing CDC test kits. States that were able to validate their kits should continue to test in this manner. States that were able to validate only the two components specific to the novel coronavirus can test using only those two using revised instructions developed at CDC. We've established that the third component, which was the cause of the inconclusive result, can be excluded from testing without affecting accuracy. We've been working with FDA, and they agree with our approach. While we're working to amend the existing EUA, we have discretionary authority from FDA to proceed in this manner. This will increase testing capacity at state and local health departments. All positive test results will continue to be confirmed by CDC for some time. Additionally, CDC has manufactured brand new test kits that will only include the two components that are specific to the novel coronavirus. Those test kits are at the International Reagent Resource where orders can be placed. We are working as quickly as we can to get CDC test kits to state and local public health authorities. However, during any infectious disease response, there is a great need for test manufacturers to rapidly make testing available in clinics, in hospitals, and at the bedside. This is part of a huge effort within the U.S. government led by HHS. Now, CDC knows that states will now start testing for this virus. You may start hearing from states directly. As always, their case counts will be the most up-to-date. CDC will continue to report cases online on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Our priority remains to get accurate diagnostic capacity and doing so quickly because we know public health surveillance is critical to our fight against this novel coronavirus. To date, our strategies have been largely successful. As a result, we have very few cases in the United States. And while we may be confronting the first instance of community spread, we're working very hard with our state and local public health partners to find out more. I want to recognize that people are concerned about the situation. We appreciate that Americans are taking this threat seriously and continuing to seek information about how to be prepared. As always, President Trump's and our number one priority is the health and safety of the American people. Our mission includes providing you with clear information that allows you to make decisions about how best to protect yourself and your family. While the immediate risk to the general American public remains low, and the U.S. government is doing everything we can to keep it low, CDC is constantly monitoring what is happening abroad. Our guidelines and advice are likely to be interim and subject to change as we learn more. We will continue to keep you updated. I'd be happy to take a few questions now.
Rebecca, we're ready to open up for questions.
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star 2. Just a moment as we wait for questions to queue. Our first question comes from Helen Braswell. That your line is now open.
Question. Dr. Massoni, now that test kits, lab, state and local labs are going to be able to test more broadly, how soon are you going to be able to get the surveillance project that you were talking about earlier with the six cities up and running?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So it is increasingly important to be able to do not just surveillance focused on the PUIs, but broader community-level surveillance. And we are moving rapidly not only to stand up those six sites, but to go from those six sites to national surveillance. We expect the first sites to be doing testing by next week and hope to be able to rapidly move, again, from six to all 50 states. This is part of a layered approach with that first component, which you're talking about, but multiple other systems that we are modifying that are either influenza systems or respiratory disease systems that we can modify to be able to also test for this novel coronavirus.
Next question, please.
Yes, our next question comes from Rob Stein at NPR. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. That's sort of a related question. I was wondering if you could just be a little bit more specific on the testing. How many states are already testing now? How many states do you think will be testing, let's say, next week? And sort of what is the timeline you're projecting for that?
Yeah, so I'm not going to give a specific number because throughout the day today, we expect additional state and local labs to be standing up, and we expect that to be happening for the next week. Our goal is to have every state and local health department online doing their own testing by the end of next week and doing everything we can to try to ensure that.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Elizabeth Cohen at CNN. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my question. When the CDC and state and local health departments have been doing contact tracing, have they been tracing contacts that the cases had only while they were symptomatic, or also the contacts that the traces had while they were asymptomatic but presumably infected? And if the answer, whatever answer it is, could you tell me, has that been the system this entire time, or is that a new policy, and what was the old policy?
Yeah, so because there have been such a small number of cases in the United States, CDC has been able to supplement the activities of the state and local health department to be very aggressive in our contact tracing, and that is true from the very first case and remains true now. So what I would say is broadly, we have been broad in terms of our evaluation of potential contacts of cases. And I would remind you that so far before this most recent case, all but two of our cases were themselves travelers, and the two cases we had that were person-to-person spread were actually quite close contacts of cases, that is, they were spouses. And so while we have been aggressive and broad in contact tracing, where we have found those cases were actually among very close contacts.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Asan Ahmed at ASP. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for this. Dr. Misonia, just about what you were saying about the Californian patient, it seems to be at odds with what Representative Ami Bera said in Congress yesterday. He said that the patient was brought in on the 19th of February, and it wasn't until 5 days, and the doctors immediately asked for a test. And it wasn't until Sunday 23rd that federal authorities agreed to do that test. I was wondering if you could speak to that. And another question is, given the U.S. situation with its public health system, 27.5 million people uninsured, do you think that this could be a problem if the virus does take root here and there's community spread and people are reluctant to even approach their healthcare providers because of the costs involved? Thank you.
Yeah, so my answer to the first question is that according to CDC records, the first call we got about this patient was on Sunday, February 23rd, period. The second question is, again, we need to remember that right now the case count in the United States is really low, and that is a reflection of the aggressive containment efforts of the U.S. government. There certainly is the possibility of additional cases, and we will continue to work aggressively to try to keep that number low. We hope that if there is spread. The spread will be limited, and that any spread, any disease in the U.S. will be mild. And our focus on public health is on those issues.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Craig Figner at KNX-CBS. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Dr. Messonnier, so when you talk about the case count being low, how do we reconcile that with the fact that here in California, the most populous state, the governor yesterday said only a couple hundred testing kits? I mean, the case count is going to be low because it sounds like there just aren't enough test kits to give results that might reflect what the real infection rate is. Is there any validity to that? Because that certainly seems to be, you know, you see the math on that, it certainly seems to be why the case count would be low. There haven't been very many tests.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to talk about that. You know, we need to remember that this situation has been evolving rapidly since the cases were first reported at the very end of December. By far, the majority of cases have been in California. A few weeks ago, we saw a real increase in cases around the world. And again, this week, we have seen an increase in cases globally. Because of the aggressive U.S. efforts at our border strategy and the containment efforts, the number of cases has been low, and we've been able to focus our efforts on travelers and their close contacts based on our evaluation of who is at highest risk. But the situation is rapidly evolving, and as it evolves, we will continue to modify our approach. In terms of diagnostic testing in California, additional labs are coming online, and additional test kits are on the way to California now.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Michelle Cortez at Bloomberg News. Your line is now open.
Thanks so much for taking the question. I think what a lot of us are grappling with a little bit is the idea that China has been able to do tens of thousands of tests, Korea has been able to do thousands of tests, and here in the U.S. we've done, you know, about 500 in our local patients, and then plus, you know, another 2,000 patients or so that have been repatriated. I can't believe that our science isn't great, and you guys got that test out really quickly, but we don't have the numbers that they do. So can you explain that to us, how others are able to do it in thousands and thousands of people and we just haven't been able to yet?
I think there's two answers to that question. One is that, you know, again, the epidemiological situation in China and in other countries is really different than the U.S. The U.S. acted incredibly quickly. Before most other countries, we aggressively controlled our borders and therefore were able to slow the spread into the United States. That was an intentional U.S. strategy with the goal of allowing us to focus our efforts. And so we have purposely and intentionally focused surveillance at those at highest risk. And again, the number of patients that were identified as PUIs in the U.S. has been smaller than some of those other countries. I guess I would also direct you back to what I said, which is the U.S. Public Health Service, CDC's role, was in rapidly developing a diagnostic and on focusing in the front line on getting that out to the public health labs. But it's been always very clear that that's only part of the solution, and a larger part of the response in any such infectious disease emergency is on getting the test kit out more broadly. That is not just to public health labs, but to hospitals and to the bedside and to the front lines. And that is part of a U.S. government strategy that is a huge priority with HHS leadership right now. CDC has always had the capacity to test from the time that rapidly when the sequence was available, and that's two labs at CDC that are doing the testing, and we have been testing aggressively the patients that state health departments have referred to us.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mike Stobe at the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You just mentioned that there are two new cases from the Diamond Princess. Could you tell us a little bit about them and where they are? Could you explain a little more about the test kits? The problem was identified as a problem with one of the reagents, but now I think you're saying that it's okay if only two reagents are used. Why were three needed in the first place, and have there been any problems with one of the other two? I'd heard report that might have been the case in a few states. And I'm sorry, finally, in the change of the testing criteria, are there potential downsides to that? Thank you.
In answer to the first question, those are two additional cases among the U.S. citizens repatriated from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. I don't have specific additional details, but that will be available on our website when we update the case counts today. In terms of the three to two, what I would say is that, please remember that our laboratories developed this test kit before there were U.S. cases. We developed it based on the posted genetic sequencing, and it was this test kit that allowed us to identify the first cases in the United States. As more cases have been identified and more cases have been available, it's become clearer that, in fact, with two of those three reactions, we actually are appropriately sensitive and specific in identifying cases. And so that's why, after being able to share that data with FDA, they agreed, and there is a new protocol, and that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the change from three to two. In terms of changing of test criteria, I think you're referring to the PUI definition. And what I would say about that is the situation has evolved and continues to evolve very quickly, and therefore we need to continue to evolve our PUI definition. This is not something that we take lightly. We know there are ramifications of this. That's why any such decision involves not just CDC, but all of our local and state health departments and partners who have a stake in this and will have an impact and will see the impact of it. So it was certainly not a decision that we made without a lot of consultation. Our goal is and remains to do everything we can to protect the health of the American people.
Rebecca, we have time for two more questions, please.
Okay, thank you. One moment. All right, our next question comes from Laura Johnson at CBN News. Your line is now open.
Okay, thank you for taking my question. Dr. Messonnier, I was wondering, what's your reaction to the fact that the new cases in China have been lower for many days in a row, and the death rate outside of China is lower than inside China? And again, also, what's your opinion of the antiviral medication remdesivir as a possible treatment, and also the possibility of immunotherapy drugs as possible treatments? Thank you.
Thank you. Hope I got all that. I think it's really good news that the case counts in China are decreasing. We are obviously watching that closely and hope that that is a trend that continues, both, of course, for the good of the citizens in China who have been through quite an outbreak, and also in the hopes that it will help us learn what we can better do in the United States to continue to control its spread here. In terms of the case fatality ratio, I think that there's a whole bunch of data, both from China and from other countries around the world, on case fatality ratios, that is, the number of deaths per overall cases. And there are a variety of mathematical modelers coordinated broadly across the United States who are looking at that data and hoping that and working together to better understand it and use it to better analyze what we might expect elsewhere, including in the United States. What I can say is, in the U.S., our cases in general have been doing very well, and we're happy to report that, and we'll continue to do everything we can to protect their health. In terms of remdesivir, an investigational product that has been used in some of these cases, it is something that NIH has the lead for, and so I would suggest that those questions are better answered by NIH.
Last question, please.
Okay, thank you.
Our last question comes from Ronnie Rabin at the New York Times. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask you, if states are able to do these, the testing, they still need to have a confirmatory test by the CDC. So does that mean there's still going to be an at least 48-hour delay for the patient getting that information? I also wanted to know if you can comment on the whistleblower report and tell us what kind of precautions were taken and was CDC involved in the visits to Travis Air Force Base. And I also just want to know how often you'll hold these briefings because public health communication is so important now. Can you give us a regular schedule or that we'll know when the briefings will be held?
Right. Okay, so thanks for actually allowing me to sort of speak specifically about this issue that you brought up, which is there are procedures that we're still working through with the states and with FDA in terms of confirmatory testing. More important than the confirmatory language is what is actionable from a public health perspective at a state and local health department. And so it's possible, for example, that there might be presumptive positives that are awaiting confirmation, but on which a state and local health department will be able to take action. And that is what's most important. And we are working through those labels now, and we'll have more information as we figure out that piece. In terms of the whistleblower investigation, let me say that CDC takes the health and safety of our employees very seriously. We're aware of the HHS whistleblower complaint, but I would defer any other questions on this matter to HHS. And in terms of these telebriefings, we will continue to routinely provide telebriefings to provide updated information when we can.
Thank you, Dr. Messonnier, and thank you all for joining us for today's briefing. Please check CDC's 2019 COVID-19 website for the latest updates on CDC's response efforts. If you have further questions, please call the media line at 404-639-3286 or email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. All parties may disconnect at this time. Leaders, please stand by.